Welcome to the Buckaroo Marketing New Media Podcast, your resource for B2B marketing for manufacturing and related industries. You create unrivaled products and services. We tell your story. Now on to the show.
My name is Deb Daly. I'm the co-founder of Buckaroo Marketing New Media, and I'm your host for today's program. Joining me today is Milt Tandy, president of Wirecrafters. Milt, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Great. Now, in doing a little bit of research on you, I noticed that you went to the University of Louisville.
That's right.
And
it's been a few years ago.
Yeah. Uniquely enough, though, you went straight to Wirecrafters.
That's right.
And you've never been anywhere else.
That is correct.
That's not normal.
I mean, no.
You don't find that.
And it can be good and bad because you can't really draw on a lot of other experiences when you've only been at one place.
Okay.
So it can be good and bad at times.
So, and I think sometimes, you know, when we're with one place for so long, we start drinking the Kool-Aid and thinking like the Kool-Aid, and we don't, you know, there isn't enough new input. So what do you do to, you know, energize and get some different ideas and thoughts and everything?
Well, you know, we around here, the way we have it set up, we do operate as a team. Mm-hmm. So although I may be president, there would rarely be a time where I would make a decision regardless of what others believe. So we meet on regular basis with all the with the entire management team. And before we buy a big piece of machinery, or, you know, before we look at a form of technology, there's going to be 12 people discussing that and making the decision if that's the direction we want to go.
Sure. So more brain power.
Right. Exactly.
Into the existing brain trust. Now, in November, you're going to be celebrating your 40th anniversary with Wirecrafters.
Yes.
Why did you decide to go there? I mean, obviously you could have gone to a lot of different places with a BS in communication. Why Wirecrafters?
Well, it truly is a unique story. I had no idea who Wirecrafters was.
Okay.
It was a very small company that happened to be down the road from a small convenience store that I worked in all through high school and college. And the gentleman that owned the company at that time, or I should say that he was a president of the company at that time, he would come into this small convenience store two or three times a year and just ask me how things are going. I never knew who he was, never knew his name, didn't know anything about him.
Yeah.
And this went on for about 2.5 years.
Hmm.
And I would just notice that he would ask what's going on, how's school going, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And the one day I said, I just graduated. And at that time he handed me his card and said, you know, I run a small company right down the road from here. Why don't you come by and interview with me? So I did.
Wow.
So I've never actually put together a resume or anything.
You didn't even really have to interview for that one too much, did you? Obviously, he must have gotten a good feel for the fact that you were there for so long and committed and showed up on time that, you know, must have gotten some good vibes from you there.
Yeah. So, you know, with that, you know, I came in and I kind of rotated out in the production floor and in the sales department. It was a one-man sales department.
Mm-hmm.
At that time. And I would come in and learn a little bit what goes on in production. Then I'd work a little in the sales office. And after a short time, I just went full-time into sales.
Okay.
And then it kind of took off from there.
Okay. What is it about sales that you like?
You know, even as a young child, and I'm talking when I was 8 or 9 years old, being involved in little things like Cub Scouts, and you had to sell raffle tickets, I got so excited about that. And then as it went into grade school and high school, and you would have to sell tickets for, you know, whatever was going on, the big picnic or whatever.
Right.
There was any type of prize for those that sold the most, I just had a good time with that. Wow. And just really enjoyed the competition. But also, I was never afraid to go knock on a door and ask them if they wanted to buy a $3 chance either.
That's great.
Yeah.
Your entrepreneurial spirit was identified early on.
I kind of knew what I was going to do, I think, at an early age.
That's great. Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about Wirecrafters and what you do.
Well, you know, Wirecrafters is a 53-year-old company. Mm-hmm. It's still owned by the same family from the beginning. We manufacture wire partitions. So when people that are not in the industry and they say, well, what is that? I tell them it's like a chain link fence, but it comes in sections that you bolt together and you build cages for tool cribs and all sorts of things. So we have really, you know, built our company in just expanding all the different applications for wire partition. So, you know, we're doing DEA cages for the drug industry. Mm-hmm. We do machine guarding around robotic work cells. Okay. We do your standard tool crib. We do driver cages. So when a truck driver or anyone is coming into the back door of a facility, they walk inside the building door and then they're contained within a small cage. And that keeps them safe from walking into fork truck traffic or something like that.
Right.
So, you know, it's just expanding the applications as our distributors come to us and they have another need. Then we kind of look at that need and say, hey, how many other people could also need this? And then we expand upon it.
Sure. So it's... In some of your new product offerings, has that been driven by customer request?
Yeah, quite a bit of it is. So, you know, we sell through distribution. So we have primarily material handling distributors all across the country from Portland, Maine, all the way to San Diego. And when they go in and see their customers, they're getting a lot of different requests on how can they, you know, be safe and secure and separate their products. So the customer tells the distributor what they're looking for, they bring it to us, and then we see what we can do with it.
Okay. Now, have you seen an uptick in the safety security aspects, say in the last 10 years, given workplace, you know, people getting upset at the workplace, or just, you know, like you said, keeping that driver safe so he's not wandering around the factory or facility doing, you know, potentially getting run over by a fork truck?
Yeah, we haven't really tried to sell that application. We haven't really pushed that there should be a fear factor tied with it.
Sure.
We've simply, you know, promoted that as a safety product. You know, we also sell rack back panels. And what that is, so many of our distributors sell pallet rack. So we wanted to find something that they're out there selling every day. Our panels could be an accessory to the pallet rack, and they can bolt our panels to the back of the rack. So if there's an active aisleway and people are walking down, you don't want something falling off the rack and hitting someone walking down the aisle and hurting them. So, you know, that's a product 15 years ago, the only application or the only answer for that was netting.
Right.
So there's always, you know, there's been the netting has been there, but our panels actually prevent the spillage where the netting would catch the load up in the net.
Right.
So, you know, that's something that has changed. One other item that we've seen just a big increase is all the different safety locks that we put on the doors. So we do a lot of keypads and card readers and biometric readers. And it's just another step up in the safety and security. And it can also let the customer know who's been going in and out of that door, not just, you know, they don't have record of who's been using the door.
Right.
So there's been a lot of things step up around the safety and security aspect.
And with that, I mean, talk to me a little bit about the different types of things that you secure.
You know, one of the biggest thing would be in the drug industry. So you have your class 3, 4, and 5 drugs. Now the real heavy narcotics will go inside a concrete vault, but the next set of drugs will be put inside our cages. And that's the federal government is overseeing the distribution of drugs, making sure this is all contained correctly. We do a lot of robotic work cells. So we're providing the guarding around robots where there's automated equipment. And typically we're providing an interlock to the door. So when you open the door, the machine shuts down.
Right.
So that's a typical product for that. That's probably two of the most safe and secure applications, you know, that we're seeing. I guess one other would be on pallet rack. Not only are we putting the panels on the back of the rack, mm-hmm. many times the customer wants to secure the inventory that's on the pallet rack. So we can put doors on the front of that pallet rack so he can take each individual bay of pallet rack and make a security cage out of it.
Okay. And with your wire partitioning, does it come in various strengths?
Yes, we have different mesh sizes. So the smallest being a 1/2-inch square mesh. And that's a mesh that we used to commonly use for the Federal Reserve because the smallest coin being a dime could not pass through that mesh.
Okay.
And then we've done a lot of a step up from that would be like a 3/4-inch square mesh. We started doing that for two customers. Walgreens wanted it because it was a small pill bottle size, mm-hmm. so they could control the pill bottles. And then Marriott InFlight, who would provide the small liquor bottles for the airports.
Right.
They had to secure the small liquor bottles. I'm not saying their employees were drinking all the liquor, but it did seem to help. We did a lot of work with Amazon. We built a cage for these guys that was bigger than a football field, and it was on a portion of their fulfillment center where they kept all the jewelry. So they went with the tight, 1/2-inch square mesh. And you know, all these things are to keep the honest employee honest.
Right.
The large majority of your employees, they're not going to steal anything. But at some point, if the opportunity is just in front of them day in and day out, one day they might just grab something. Who knows?
Sure.
But But yeah, so we have seen different mesh types. And the largest and heaviest one we see more commonly, it's like a 2-inch square mesh, and it's in a heavier 6-gauge wire. And typically the government will use this for like import-export control. So they'll have inventory at a government facility or an airport where they've got import-export material, and they'll put it in a much heavier, stronger mesh.
Got it. Interesting. So in telling me about the different meshes and everything, you know, just from the pill bottles, the little liquor bottles, I mean, those are things I would have never thought of as far as, you know, something that you would need to secure. What other types of things could you share with us that you, you know, maybe new things that came, you know, that you didn't think about, but then it was presented when the customer had a need?
Yeah, you know, because I've been with the company so long, I remember when Toys R Us was just hitting the market. Mm-hmm. So I've watched them come and I've watched them go. But they had a lot of games. Yeah. So all the games had to be in secure cages. We've done cages that are, we call them holding cells, where they might go into a courthouse or a municipality. So when they're bringing the prisoners in, they're holding cells. They're only there temporarily. So we do quite a few of those. One interesting one we did was for a university in Southern California, where they put in one of these holding cells, and instead of having us just put our standard paint finish on it, mm-hmm. they wanted it hot dip galvanized. And that's, you want hot dip galvanized when it's going to be subject to moisture.
Right.
So they told us this cage, they were calling it the puke or vomit cage. So when they would have concerts and events on campus, and some of the students would get a little too much to drink, they would put them inside our holding cell cage until they sobered up. So there's been some really different uses for our cage. I know a few years ago during one of the presidential inaugural day events, mm-hmm. they bought about 3 very large cages that they were using for holding cells. And these cages were like 20 by 20. So they planned on putting a handful of people in them. I know that the Philadelphia Eagles, the NFL team, mm-hmm. they have about 3 or 4 holding cells in the basement of the stadium. Because when they arrest people at the game, they have a judge that comes in on Sunday nights, and they go ahead and take care of them immediately instead of holding them till the next day.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's been a lot of different uses for our cages.
Interesting, especially the galvanized, obviously. And for our viewers that don't know, when you have galvanized, it's, you can hose it down and, you know, it'll bounce right back. So that's part of the reason as far as the moisture. So if anybody does get sick, you can easy clean up.
That's right. Exactly.
Now, online, I noticed, and I'm a great fan of yours because you've done Mondays with Milt. And for our audience, Milt does these little short outtakes every Monday. And he's just very fun and entertaining. You're just a blast to watch. And you come up with new ideas and everything. How did that start?
You know, it kind of began because I would check in with my marketing team just about every morning to see what was going on. And one of them made a comment, oh, here we go again, moments with Milt. And several months later, the director of marketing, David Fishburne, he said, how would you like to do a Mondays with Milt? And we'll just talk about something new every Monday. Mm-hmm. And after 173 episodes, we're beginning to run out of things to talk about. So recently we announced that we're going to do it every other week.
Sure.
Just to try to come up with a little more material.
Well, that makes sense. And I know that what struck me from a marketing standpoint was that you really have been kind of a pioneer on that end, you know, as far as starting that and getting into the video and giving your company an identity and the brand, and even to the event that you are, even to the effect that you interview a lot of your employees. And that's very interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, we obviously, and you hear it all the time, and but you really have to believe that your people are your best asset. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we probably had, I don't know, 30 different employees over the past year or two that we've interviewed. And we've done another little segment called Take a Walk on the Wire Side. Mm-hmm. And that's where we just walk for about 100 feet and just kind of talk anything in general, how long they've been at Wirecrafters and what do they do when they leave Wirecrafters. So, you know, really engaging your employees is such a good thing, because they've all got their own story. There's a reason they've been at the company for so long, and it's good to share that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, speaking of employees, how many employees do you have at Wirecrafters?
Right now, we're at about 160 employees.
Okay. And percentage-wise, office to manufacturing percentage?
I would say that about 25% are in the office.
Okay. Now, yeah. I know that you know, there's been a decline in skilled trades. Do you offer apprenticeships, or how do you get people, you know, to your door?
Yeah, the toughest part of that has been finding welders. And that's been a really tough thing for us. The other departments, we can typically train people how to work in our finishing department, shipping, saw department. But in the welding department, what we found has worked pretty good is some of the local high schools are bringing back that vocational school.
Right.
Where, you know, probably 30 years went by where the vocational schools kind of evaporated.
Right.
And we are now kind of paying the price for that. Not everybody needs to be in college.
Right.
You know, there are so many trades out there where these young people can do so well by learning a trade, and eventually they may start their own company, whether it's plumbing, electrical, HVAC, or welding. So we've been kind of working with some of the local high schools, and they brought us some real quality young people, and it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, and that's a really special gift, as far as there are definitely people who definitely are more, I got to work with my hands, or
right.
They're more kinesthetic in their learning, so they have to be moving, and they love that movement and that learning process. And it's just part, you know, it really is fantastic to watch someone like that work, because it just a different kind of wiring than what, you know, you might have.
Yeah. And, you know, not long ago, we had an individual on our production floor, and we were giving him the opportunity to move inside on the engineering side. And he probably wasn't in there a full week when he said, you know what you're trying to do for me is awesome. I really appreciate it, but I need to be out on that production floor. I need to be able to move and build things and see what I'm doing with my hands. I'm not going to be happy sitting inside. And you know, we were good with that. We were disappointed.
Right.
So, you know, we just had to go to plan B and we did. But I was so happy for him to be able to tell us right off the bat, you know, this probably isn't the best thing for me. And he's much happier what he's doing now.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. If someone can identify that within themselves quickly, that's a real gift too, knowing that this, you know, because otherwise sometimes I'm sure you've seen it where in business where somebody's taken, you know, a duck and tried to make it, you know, go fetch the bone. And, you know, it's just not made to do that. You know, it's a,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
So anyway, so why don't you share with me one secret to Wirecrafter's success?
You know, it once again, it's going to come off like it's a little bit phony, but it truly is the secret, I think, to our success. We try to build relationships with our distributors.
Okay.
And actually, I think our team does an extremely good job. We've got about 12 inside salespeople. We've got 5 outside salespeople. And then we've got our engineering support staff. And everyone knows that we have to be ready to help that customer when they need it. Mm-hmm. And we really express how critical that is to build that relationship and let them know that they can call us anytime and we're going to help them quickly if there's a problem. I got an email probably 2 hours ago from one of our distributors that said, and it was a very large job that we had to really jump through hoops to get it out on time.
Mm-hmm.
And he just sent me an email I got a couple hours ago that said, I want you to know how easy it was to work with your team on such a huge project. And you know, that's something that I'll be sharing with everyone. You don't always get to hear that, but it's so nice when you do. But that's just it's really the attitude we try to take.
Right. And that's what you always strive for.
Right.
I know with, you know, since you work with distributors, like I know, for example, one of my clients, they have an automatic welder and there's wire partition. I assume your products can also be sold to OEMs to integrate with other, you know, other products.
That's right. Yeah. So we work with integrators, especially in the automated equipment world. So a lot of robotic machine builders. We get involved with them because every time they're selling one of their machines, one of their robots, they've got to put a guarding around it to keep it safe.
Right.
So that is a very big part of our business. And that is one area where so many times our product has been overlooked. They are working on $500,000 or $1 million project with this automated equipment. And then everything's ready to go. And they're like, oh my gosh, we can't run this machine until we have a guard around it.
Yeah. Oops.
So then we get that. Yeah, we get that phone call. But you know what? That's good. That's good. We're prepared for that.
Yes.
So we do a lot of work with OEMs typically with OEMs, we've got that relationship where we know what's coming. There's not too many surprises, but you will work with integrators that are kind of being, you know, they may not have all of the information immediately, and you find yourself jumping through hoops a little bit more.
Now, one thing that you mentioned is you've mentioned relationships. And honestly, that's a word that everybody says, and they use it constantly. You know, we're about service quality, relationships, et cetera. Can you give me a tangible example of something that you do to build or enhance those relationships?
Yeah, probably the simplest thing I could tell you is Wirecrafters, we have three different dealer councils.
Okay.
And at each one of these, we bring in 9 individuals from all across the country. And they typically come in for a couple days, and we use an outside facilitator that knows our company and our product very well, and she runs that dealer council. So you're not listening to me or the national sales manager the entire 2 days. And we make probably a half a day out of that 2-day period. We allow those 9 members to talk about what they need to talk to each other about. What kind of issues do they have?
Right.
You know, how are they paying their salespeople? You know, what are they doing for installations across the country? Is there something about insurance they need to discuss? But we make sure that they have plenty of time to discuss things of their interest, not just about Wirecrafters. And one of these councils has been going on for 8 years.
Wow.
And we've given the people the opportunity to step down if they feel like they're hearing the same thing every year, or, you know, they want to move on and do something else and they don't have time to do this, but they all keep coming back.
Okay.
And that means a lot to us, because they want to see the guys that's on the council with them. They want to hear what we have to say. So those three dealer councils, man, if that is truly where the relationship building is happening.
Okay. And I assume in that process, they're able to say, hey, Milt, you know, it'd be really great if we could manufacture this or that, as far as giving you a hands-on bird's eye view of what customers may be wanting.
Yeah, that's right. There's always that opportunity to share ideas. We take them out on our production floor, especially to the innovation area, where we have an innovation manager, and he's, you know, that's what his job is. What's the next application? What's the next thing we can do that'll help you guys? So we get a lot of input from the 27 different people that come in.
That's fantastic. You know, since obviously we deal with a lot of manufacturers and everything, and being a manufacturer yourself, what's the one thing that you think every owner or business owner should know, you know, before buying your products, or something to think about, or even a success tip? What's something, you know, as owners, we don't always know what we don't know. So I guess I'm asking for, you know, a pearl of wisdom.
Boy, that's a really good question. I'm not a business owner, but I think the one thing as I talked earlier about your people being your greatest asset, and the relationships you build with your distributors, you've got to stay in close contact with not only your customers, but also, you know, the people that work in your company. And, you know, I guess as a president, you have to be in charge of the people that are in charge of people. And they have to understand that you are ready to help them with anything they need in order to run their department a little bit better.
Sure.
So I think one of the biggest things is get out of your office and engage with everyone that's a part of your business.
Okay. Yeah. That's excellent advice. Excellent advice. Is there anything else that you'd like to add? Anything that's come to mind during our conversation that you'd like to share with our viewers?
Where did the name Buckaroo come from?
Ah,
I can't be the only person wondering that.
Great question. It's actually a byproduct of my partner, who is also my husband of 33 years. And so we've been working side by side for 20 years. But, and we come from obviously the manufacturing engineering side. And 20 years ago, everything was so formal, you know, in suits and pantyhose and all that. And so
right.
Ken actually came up with the idea of calling our company Buckaroo. And I remember thinking at first, I thought, wow, you're nuts. Nobody's going to do business with us, with Buckaroo. But I have to give him credit because it was the greatest thing that he ever did. And the best genius idea, because, you know, obviously it's at the beginning of the alphabet. It has nothing to do with cowboys, but you always think of the Hunt for Red October when Sean Connery says Buckaroo. Always gives me such, even now, it puts a smile on my face and gives me great energy. So typically people will not remember me, but they will remember Buckaroo. And so that was just one of those things that came out of the creative process. Unfortunately, we both have enough. I know enough to be dangerous in his world, and he knows enough to be dangerous in my world. So that way we really form a good match and pair for one another as far as with what we do.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's interesting. And that was a great marketing ploy so many years ago. No question. Because so many other companies have rather boring names.
Right.
And as I've told people within our facility, a handful, that I was going to be on the Buckaroo TV, they all had something to say about it. So that was good. I think they'll all remember that.
Thank you for asking, because believe it or not, I'm not asked that question very often.
All right. Well, I've really enjoyed being on here today. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Well, thank you for joining me on Buckaroo TV. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in. And if you have any questions, be sure to let us know. And of course, before I sign off here, Milt, if anyone has a question or would like to reach you, what's the best way to do that?
Probably my email address, and that would be the letter mtandy@wirecrafters.com.
Okay. And your website is?
Wirecrafters.com.
Okay. Well, great. And thank you so much. And to our viewers, if you enjoyed today's show, please subscribe to our channel.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Milt.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Buckaroo Marketing New Media Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about B2B marketing for manufacturing and related industries, please visit us at gobuckaroo.com.